His assistant told me that the Admiral had, in fact, found these code names and code project names and numbers useful. He inquired through channels and found some of these ops in a cell in the Pentagon. Once Admiral Wilson identified this group, he told the contact person in this super secret cell, "I want to know about this project." And he was told, "Sir, you don't have any to know. We can't tell you." Now, can you imagine being an Admiral, J2, the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, at the Pentagon, and being told, "We're not going to tell you?" Well, he was shocked and angry. I took one of our witnesses, Shari, our military advisor, and Apollo astronaut, Edgar Mitchell with me to this meeting with the Admiral. It was a stand-up briefing. As the briefing progressed, he began cancelling other appointments. He was so interested in the information. The only reason the meeting ended when it did was because Ed Mitchell had to get up to New York for a TV interview. But the Admiral, I know, would have kept going for some time more. During this briefing, the Admiral and I discussed the risk this rogue group, that had shoved him aside, was to the United States, the rule of law and to the national security. I pointed out that the first CIA director, Admiral Ross Kahilenkowita, had written a letter in the early 1960s stating that the secrecy related to UFOs, and not the UFOs, were a threat to the national security. I told the Admiral that this illegal, rogue group had ARV technology that can do circles around his B-2 stealth bombers. He thought a minute and said, "Well, as far as I am concerned, if you can get people who know about this matter to talk on the record, you have my permission to go to the media with this. This group is illegal." So when people ask who supported disclosure, among others, I tell them the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. After this meeting, these rogue groups came at us with a vengeance. Obviously, they were very disturbed that we had gotten specific information to a man like Adam Wilson, and that they were shown to be the illegal operation that they are. So, Bill Colby was murdered, the congressman died very quickly from the type of cancer he had. Shari Adamiak and I got metastatic cancer at the same time. And so now we're in the fight for our lives, literally. After the briefing for Congress in April 1997, Dan Burton came up to us and said, "I want everything you have on this subject, because I'm going to look into it." It turns out, he tried to and then had someone visit him who said, "Back off of this." Someone who knows him personally explained to me that the congressman was threatened. If he's asked about it today, Congressman Burton will say, "Oh, it was just something I had a personal interest in." Not true. One of his best friends, who is his scheduler in his office, is a woman who saw a UFO hovering outside her bedroom window. She was close enough to Congressman Burton that he knew that she was telling him the absolute truth. As the chairman of the Government Oversight and Reform Committee, overseeing the government, Congressman Burton was a very appropriate key person, but within months, he was shut down. So, here we are, getting this information to not only people like the CIA director, Sen. Pell, Senate Appropriations people and Senate Intelligence Committee members, but also to people who really have personal knowledge that this is real, like Dan Burton. And an increasingly powerful group of good men at the Pentagon were interested and concerned, and discovering that, in fact, the shadow government had taken over the subject. And on top of that, you've got really deep throats ready to pull the curtain back on the Wizard of Oz as he sits there pulling all the levers, scaring the hell out of people. We were exposing what Wernher von Braun warned about, hoaxing an extraterrestrial attack so that there could be a global seizure of power around fear and war. I assure you, the people that were receiving this information took it very seriously. So, in that setting comes this devastating personal turn of events. Shari, my close friend and trusted advisor, whose situation rapidly worsened, passed away in less than a year. It was a very emotional and difficult time for me. In July 1993, I was almost killed leaving the planning meeting for disclosure held near the Monroe Institute, in apostrophe 94, there was the terrifying, in attack at the Street Maritz Hotel in NY City, followed by the strange 4 a.m. attacks later that summer at my home. And now this is 97. I was taken right to the limits of what I could endure. And yet, some really wonderful things happened during this time. One of them was from a different star system. There were no two alike. I entered the state of God consciousness while at the same time connecting with these beings. A beautiful communing began as we were each awake and aware of that time and place and yet instantly awake in the infinite cosmic being. It was transcendental in many ways, although it was also very present, very real, super real. As we were in this state together, I could see beyond that level of energy to another level where, suddenly, there were many angelic forms. And then beyond that, I saw the Avatar, a divine being representing the Godhead. It was a beautiful cosmic gathering that no words can describe. I approached each elder ET independently, honored each person, and welcomed them to Earth, thanking them for their presence. At a certain point, others noted that it looked like I had disappeared. Some people couldn't see me at all. Other people could just see through me. I felt enlivened, lighter, enthralled. My vibratory frequency was so high, I could feel myself becoming rarefied. At one point, I thought I was going to lift up or levitate or just disappear. But my experience was that I stayed there, pretty much fully in the physical, and yet people were seeing through me. This went on for half an hour or more. It was a coming together of people who were all part of the cosmic culture, if you will. We were there with them, for that purpose. That was the purpose of this meeting. The AT beings also expressed their gratitude for our work and effort, and asked that we do all we could for universal peace. Specifically, we were asked to intervene to avert the Star Wars technologies from being used against ET peoples. I assured them we would do all we can. The next day, Shari and I went off for a quiet time together in the San Juan Hills south of Blanca Peak. We climbed up on some rocks and I pulled out my compass. During the ET encounter the night before, the compass had been in my left inner coat pocket, right over my heart. Now, as I looked at this compass, I saw that magnetic north had been shifted almost 180 degrees. The needle was altered so that it was pointing almost 180 degrees off magnetic north. It was clear evidence of a very unusual magnetic field flux anomaly that affected the compass from the encounter the night before. The compass stayed like that for several days and then went back to normal. We have photographs of this, by the way. It is very reminiscent of the same compass rotating counter-clockwise as the AT craft approached us in July 1992. Nearly 5 years earlier. Then, in July of 1997, we took a research training group to England to that same area, in Wiltshire, England, near Stonehenge. That year, we were renting a huge old manor house that must have been built in the 1600s or 1700s. We housed the entire team there for a week. Prior to leaving the States for England, we learned that Shari's cancer had become metastatic and was now in her lymph nodes. This was very serious. Also, I had just had another malignant melanoma taken off. So that first night we were in the manor house nursing our wounds and we were frankly very emotionally upset. At times we were just laughing and telling stories, and at times in tears. We just knew one or both of us were not going to make it. As we were sitting in the upstairs room of the manor house, Ron Russell and a few others, on the XETI expedition, were outside on the grounds. Shari and I were just too tired and too upset to go out, but I had told the group they should go out by 10:30 p.m. The room Shari and I were in had a bay window and a little fireplace. Suddenly, we saw a brilliant light, like a ball or a cluster of light, fly right through the closed window, turn and go over by the fireplace and then elongate into an extraterrestrial person. Here is this extraterrestrial being, shimmering, again not quite fully materialized, standing about 3 feet tall. There was nothing subtle about this, because it was visible with the naked eye in the fully lit room. Shari didn't see it at first, so I said, "Shari, look." As she turned, She saw the AT and exclaimed, "Oh, my God." We sat there in meditation with this being, who was basically trying to console us. He was very sweet, and very grateful and very loving, just beautiful. We remained in this state of contact and meditation for probably half an hour. I knew then that one of us wasn't going to make it, and this being was expressing great compassion, respect, and gratitude for our work. We had no intention of ever relating this account to anyone, it was so personal, beautiful and poignant. But the next day Ron Russell brought up the fact that, while they were out on the manor grounds, a very unusual event was observed by everyone. Out of the sky, at a little past 10:30 p.m. a light appeared, and then descended, coming over the treetops and directly into the bay window of my room. It descended out of space in a clear sky, came down across the manor house lawn, and flew into the window. Ron exclaimed, "That's Steve's room." And so they saw the arrival of this being, from space. The entire group outside saw how our encounter in the manor house began, as a light from space that flew over the grounds and right into the window, whereupon I saw this light enter the room, then materialize as a being on the hearth of the fireplace. You will find that the truth hides its own reality, because the truth is so much more bizarre, and beautiful, than a science fiction movie. Our last expedition with Shari was in Joshua Tree Wilderness in 1997. April of that year we were at the Pentagon with the Admiral, disclosing all this information in front of key people in Congress and the White House. But by the fall, Shari had metastatic lesions in her brain and was partially paralyzed. Shari had joined me in this effort in 1991. She was at the first lecture I'd ever given. And she was with me until she passed away in January of 1998. I was going to cancel the Joshua Tree expedition. But Shari said, "If it's the last thing I do, I'm going to be there with you and the ATs." And so she was. We were all amazed by the indomitable will of Shari. She was a lioness, completely fierce, very devoted and extremely competent. Shari was the first person that I could take as far as anyone could possibly go, into contact. She could go the furthest, without exception. There's nobody else, to date, that could go that far. She had no fear and knew her destiny. It was she and I who privately went out to the Barker, this remote area of the Colorado Rockies where we have our trainings, near Crestone, in 1996. It was a vision quest. I told her that I wanted to show her some things and tell her some things that I had always known, since I was very young, since my contact as a young boy. I had never told anyone, but I knew that she was very perceptive and spiritually awake. I knew she was ready. So, we went to the Barker on a cold evening in the spring of 96. I said, "Let's walk out and invite the ET beings in." As we did, we saw a craft in the sky, moving very strangely. Suddenly, I said, "Now, look out here in the field." There, an enormous discoid, shaped area was scintillating with light. It was like a hologram, but more real and more alive. After a few moments, distinct humanoid-shaped forms began to emerge from this craft, and approached us. I said to Shari, "Now, let me show you how these extraterrestrial beings prefer to stay in this form when they're on Earth, because it's safe." As this event was unfolding, I said to Shari, "Now, I want to tell you what the structure of the cosmos is and how it's put together and how it is that they are here." We had a tape recorder, so I began speaking and recorded what you now can read in the chapters in Extraterrestrial Contact, The Evidence and Implications, The Crossing Point, and Extraterrestrials and the New Cosmology. That information was recorded in real time during this contact in the desert of Colorado. Later that evening, we went back to the Barker townhouses. As we drove to the townhouse, I said, "Now, they're going to follow us home." We saw these bright strobe-like lights along the road, escorting us as we drove back to the condo in Crestone. After we got back to the condo, we went out on the patio to see the Sangre de Cristo mountains that rise up 14,000 feet, covered with snow. They were shining in the moonlight in the crystal clear air of the Rockies. I said, we should be here, because they're going to show us one of their points of entry and where they like to be. Now, look around. Can you see the fine structure of the fabric of the astral component of the cosmos that supports the material creation? I explained, thought and consciousness and the astral forms of light support the material cosmos. A gap exists, where the realm of pure consciousness, thought and astral light phases into a semi-materialized energy field. This is the realm where the astral crystallizes to the material, like an architectural blueprint. The astral becomes crystallized, as a matrix, that then supports the material objects and even the atmosphere. And as I said that, it was like a veil fell away, and she saw it, the structure of this celestial, etheric and astral realm as it crystallizes into what we call the material cosmos. Now, look up here on the mountain. And there was an enormous sombrero-shaped craft that was translucent. It was not fully materialized, but was like a really dense, perfectly shaped cloud, being lit from within, a golden, white light, sitting on the very top of one of the highest peaks above Crystone. It was there for about 45 minutes. Because Shari could see and experience those things, I had someone to articulate them to. And because I could articulate them to her, I could share them with others. We cannot teach anything unless there is someone ready to see it. There is a saying, the wise are they who speak not unless they have a hearer. The first year we went to Joshua Tree was 1996. Early on, a very fast, spiraling craft came right overhead. We could actually hear it whistle, it was so low in the atmosphere. It came right overhead and over the Palm Springs Valley. Everyone in the group saw this and was astonished. One night, we were leaving one site in Joshua Tree Wilderness because I had a remote view that we should move. As we drove along this dirt road, very late at night, suddenly the dashboard lights dimmed. I turned to Shari, oh, they're here. Seconds later, coming straight down from the zenith, a huge craft shaped like a Hershey's Kiss appeared. It was flat on the bottom and tapered up to a point, and had a scintillating, sparkling tail on top. As it came down at enormous speed towards the desert floor, it was 200, 300 feet in diameter. It was a teal color, and brilliant, so bright that it illuminated the desert floor like daytime and then, whoosh, went straight into the earth and it was gone. Ah! This is where they're telling us they're going to be located under the earth. I said. If you have the ability to materialize and materialize objects, you can stay in a quasi-materialized form so that one object can go straight through another object, like a ghost going through a wall. There's no rear, sun, why not? Most matter is, after all, empty space. As I drove, I mapped, mentally, precisely where this huge ET craft went into the earth. Driving very rapidly, I raced to that site. But there was a vehicle in front of me, going too slowly. I floored our car and flew by them so that I could track exactly where the AT craft went into the earth. We have a special site where we do our field work in Joshua Tree now, where we saw this huge craft go into the earth. Shari was determined to come, but the cancer was all through her body and was in her brain, she could barely walk. The first night, she lost her balance and fell, skinning her knees. But she said, oh, it's okay. It's okay. Here she is, on her deathbed, and is still determined to join us in the name of universal peace, to be out under the stars, together with these cosmic beings. It was all so beautiful, and yet, at the same time, so painful for me. Godhead, to help build a bridge to the worlds of light. Our culture has all but forgotten the sacred moment of the passing. Today, everyone is hooked up to tubes. And it's all very technical, but there's a lack of appreciation of what else should be going on at that moment, as we transform from the physical plane to the celestial and astral world. I want to share this story because it illustrates what is possible in that regard. In January, people who were taking care of Shari wanted me to fly out to Denver. I had visited several times and was very involved in those final months. But I said, I will come out when the time is right. Timing is everything, and each of us has our moment of a sacred passing to the other side. Early one morning, while I was meditating, I suddenly went into a state of cosmic consciousness and then into God consciousness. What I saw was the entirety of creation in the shape of what some call the cosmic egg. If you can imagine, it was infinite, and yet it was discrete. Around it was the infinity of God. I was in a state of being perfectly one with that and aware of it. Then I saw that Shari was there. She was ahead of me, and I knew that what I was doing was showing her the highest celestial level of creation. I knew that she would go into the infinite, celestial home ahead of me, because she was literally closer to that infinite cosmic conscious place. I knew that she was going to go into it and become one with it. It was, in a sense, the raiment of God, the body of God. It was the total expression of Creator, creation and unbounded mind together. I could see the totality of the creation as this gorgeous peach, pink, magenta, sombrero, shaped or galaxy, shaped entity, similar to an egg. It was infinite, even though it was discrete, filled with joy, indescribably magnificent. It was not only physically stunning and celestial, but filled with love and everything beautiful. As we approached it, we heard a trillion, an infinite number of, beautiful angelic voices, like the Vienna Boys Choir, singing, "We are all one in spirit," over and over and over. As I gazed into infinity, I could see that every created being in the cosmos was represented in it, and yet was still one in this state of infinite awareness. From the morn of eternity, the sound of these voices repeated, "We are all one in spirit," in a specific melody so exquisite, if only I could describe it. It was beautiful beyond words. And just as that happened, I dissolved into that state of infinite love and perfect unity in consciousness. After coming back to the awareness of my bedroom, I looked over at the clock and marked the time. I knew in my soul that 7:24, hour periods, seven rotations of the earth, from that exact moment would be the moment of Shari's passing. I just knew it. Well, she was getting closer and closer to death, and everyone was saying, "Oh, you have to be here." And I said, "I will be there." So, on the sixth day, I flew to Denver. Her family and Ron Russell and all her close friends were there, and then I just sort of enigmatically appeared. I said, "I'm here because it is time." That night I waited till everyone left Shari's hospice room, and then sat with her in prayer and meditation. She had been in a coma for weeks. As I read a beautiful prayer to her, I looked over, and her eyes opened for the first time in weeks. And one enormous tear glided down her cheek. She knew I was there. So I told her, "It's okay, you can go now." I was certain that Shari needed to hear that from me, because she had told me that she felt she was abandoning me with the burden of this work. I said, "You can do enormous work on the other side. You can do many things beyond what you can do here." What most people don't know is that those enlightened people who go to the other side are the leaven that mysteriously raises this world. They're the inspiration and the unseen hand that protects and guides and helps the progress of this world. It's happening all the time, whether we see it or not. I connected with her very deeply, reassured her, and said, "You can go now. It's time. You can go." Seeing her in her coma state, and realizing that she'd complete her passage to the other side by the next morning, I felt a deep sorrow. I was staying in Shari's home, which was now empty, except for a woman who had been caring for her. But, that night I couldn't go back right away, so I went to a night place in downtown Denver. I simply wanted to sit and have a drink someplace. A gay couple began chatting with me. I ended up telling them all my feelings. I explained to them about the astral and spiritual realm and what was going to happen. These newfound friends were extraordinarily pure-hearted and spiritual. Just what I needed on this night, in a most unlikely setting. I found that I can go to places like that and meet such spiritually incredible people. On the other hand, I can go into a church and meet misguided, cruel people. So, it's not the place, it's the intent. Late that night, I returned and slept in Shari's old room. That morn, in I awoke very early, sat up in bed and meditated. I quietly marked the time, because I knew the exact hour and moment, adjusting for time zones, of her passing. The woman who had taken care of Shari suddenly knocked at my door. "It's time, she is close to passing," she said. "You're all dressed and ready to go," she said, with a surprised look. I arrived before the others and spent time alone with Shari, taking her into the state of infinite peace and love and into that unbounded state of pure cosmic mind that awakes us. As others gathered, we said prayers together, standing around her bed in a semi-circle. At a certain moment, after we prepared her spiritually and connected her to God, I turned to her and said, "Now, let go of all things, Shari, and go into the eternal light." And with that, she took her last breath, and ascended to Providence. Her passing was beautifully peaceful. Even so, I was devastated. Suddenly, there was an extraordinary power that entered the room. It felt like the darshan or spiritual field of a highly enlightened avatar, like a breeze of powerful divine energy that swept through the room and completely through me. It was physically palpable. I then knew she went to the highest level. And then I completely fell apart. All of us need to care for one another in this way at the time of our passing. We all need the help, prayers and spiritual power of each other, so that we rise to the highest and best spiritual state possible at the moment of our transition to the next plane. The night of her passing I wrote the following tribute: Shari Adamiak passed on to the world of light today, January 20, 1998 at 9:50 a.m. MST. Shari made her transition in the presence of friends and loved ones, peacefully and without pain. I ask that everyone pause to say a prayer for Shari and the progress of her soul in the presence of God. What words can contain our sense of loss and the love we all shared with Shari? Since 1991, when we first met at a lecture in Los Angeles, Shari has been a pillar of strength and support, an indefatigable colleague, a true friend, an intrepid fellow explorer, an irreplaceable confidant and a fearless lioness without whose dedication XETI could not have realized its many historic achievements. She has been my right hand and trusted assistant for over 6 years. Whether braving the dangers of the remote parts of Latin America or assisting with meetings at the offices of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the Pentagon, Shari was there with me, and for all of us. She never faltered and she never gave up. Unfazed by the barbs of critics or the machinations of relentless covert operations, she resolutely worked for a time of peace, a peace universal, for the Earth and for countless worlds beyond. How many wonders did we witness together? From walking in the shadow of some of the world's largest volcanoes with ET's spacecraft floating silently above us, to watching a dozen top secret military witnesses tell an assemblage of congressmen the truth about UFOs, Shari and I saw events unfold of such great significance. And through it all, Shari was filled with a joy, an excitement and energy, an almost childlike curiosity and wonder at the mysteries of creation and the astonishing potential of these times. Even as her body began to fail her, she evinced a spirit of such grace, courage and love that all those who knew her were amazed and blessed by her example. Just 2 months ago, in November of 1997, she journeyed to Joshua Tree Wilderness in California with me. There she experienced what she loved most, the oneness with the stars, the universe and the communication with those peoples from other planets visiting our turbulent world. Fighting weakness, pain and increasing paralysis of her right arm and leg, Shari went into the desert each night, undeterred by the growing obstacles posed by her physical condition. And there, through the crossing point of light, we saw the depths of space and the people and spacecraft from other worlds, who await our own coming of age as a people. Nothing would keep her from this purpose. Now, a great light has gone from this world, but it shines forever brightly in the realms of eternity. I know Shari was ready for this great journey. Precisely 7 mornings before the morning of her passing, we crossed over together to the other side, if only for a while. Awestruck, we witnessed a light, a presence, so beautiful, emanating from the center of creation. No words can depict it, it was beyond anything the intellect can grasp. An infinite brilliance, golden while in the center and becoming more peach, pink and magenta as it expanded infinitely before us, suffused us in a sea of love, joy and beauty unlike any experience of my life.